Today is Friday, May 7th, and you're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, growing challenges as U.S. pulls out of Afghanistan.
The U.S. military says Afghanistan has seen 80 to 120 enemy-initiated attacks each day for the past year.
Plus, WHO warns of new COVID surge in Africa.
A relatively low number of cases is giving rise to complacency and non-compliance with preventive measures such as masking and social distancing.
Also, a look at how animals and plants join humans in the essential work of mothering. These stories and more are next. Top U.S. defense officials say that less than 1 week into the pullout of American troops from Afghanistan, the drawdown is going according to plan. But, as VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb reports, challenges remain.
The U.S. military has closed one base in Afghanistan and pulled out enough weapons and equipment to fill about 60 of these C-17 cargo planes.
Less than 1 week in, the drawdown is going according to plan.
Speaking Thursday at their first joint briefing, Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin and Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff General Mark Milley vowed to continue aiding the Afghan military with funding and support from bases outside Afghanistan. But the leaders acknowledged big challenges looming soon, including how U.S. forces will continue to train and advise their Afghan partners.
We'll also continue to take a look at training them in perhaps other locations. We don't know. We haven't figured that out 100% yet. But also things like maintenance support and perhaps CT support from over the horizon.
The U.S. is leaving Afghanistan after nearly 20 years of war. Douglas Lute is a retired lieutenant general and the former United States permanent representative to NATO.
What we have tried for many years, which is to defeat the Taliban militarily, has not worked. And we are stalemated on the security front. We are stalemated at Doha, and sometimes it feels like we're stalemated within the Afghan government in terms of building a coherent Afghan political set inside Kabul.
And as the U.S. pulls out, Milley says Afghan forces haven't crumbled under the increased pressure.
It's not a foregone conclusion, in my professional military estimate, that the Taliban automatically win and Kabul falls or any of those kind of dire predictions. That's not a foregone conclusion.
The U.S. military says Afghanistan has seen 80 to 120 enemy-initiated attacks each day for the past year. That pace, along with stalled peace talks, points to a rough road ahead. Carla Babb, VOA News, The Pentagon.
Negotiations continue on the U.S. return to the Iran nuclear deal and how to ensure its full and effective implementation. Observers said the threat of nuclear proliferation in the Middle East cannot be ignored and must be tackled, even as Iran demands an end to crippling U.S. sanctions. But as Dave Gavlak reports from Amman, some analysts also say the wide-ranging activities of Iranian-backed Shiite militias and missiles in the region need to be addressed.
David Scheniger is a senior fellow at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy and a former Trump administration Middle East advisor. He and other observers say Iran is desperate for sanctions relief as it demands all sanctions be lifted before it returns to compliance with the nuclear deal known as the JCPOA. But Scheniger argues that the U.S. should leverage the current talks also to deal with Iran's malign behavior and that of its proxies in the region.
If enough sanctions are lifted, there'll be insufficient leverage to get the Iranians to discuss any of the other elephants in the room, that is, the missiles and the Iranian-backed Shiite militias that are running amok in the Middle East. From Iraq to Yemen to Syria to Lebanon, Iran seems to be pursuing its own maximum pressure campaign against the Biden administration in an effort to gain concessions at the negotiating table on the nuclear deal.
He points to recent attacks on the U.S. military bases in Iraq, increasing drone attacks on Saudi Arabia by Yemen's Houthi rebels, despite the Biden administration's delisting of the Houthis as a terror group, and Iranian fast boats harassing U.S. naval vessels in the Persian Gulf. However, Financial Times International Affairs editor David Gardner, in remarks made to Columbia University's Global Center, said he sees a weakened Iran through crippling sanctions, failed regional adventures, and the loss of its chief military strategist, Qasem Soleimani, and a U.S. airstrike in Iraq last year. This is the case, he said, despite Iran's fear of influence in the so-called Shiite Crescent.
Iraq, Syria, and Lebanon, this is not an arc, an axis of power. It's an arc of failure. failed states, which Iran increasingly struggles to manage, especially post Qasem Soleimani. It's not possible to proceed purely on that hard power formula of militias and missiles. The need for sanctions relief is very, very pressing indeed.
Still, London's International Institute of Strategic Studies says recent satellite imagery shows the construction of a new set of 7 silos storing advanced new missiles in southern Iran that could pose concern for military air bases in Saudi Arabia and Bahrain. Others point to Iran-linked Iraqi militias muscling in on a strategic region that connects Iraq and Syria following the Islamic State militants' defeat. Dale Gavlek for VOA News, Amman.
Many world leaders welcomed the Biden administration's announced support for waiving patent restrictions on COVID-19 vaccines, the so-called TRIPS waiver, at the World Trade Organization. While this could be a breakthrough in the global fight against the pandemic, as White House correspondent Patsy Widas-Kuwara reports, it's just the first step in a long and complicated process.
The proposal was submitted in October 2020 by India and South Africa. South African President Cyril Ramaphosa.
It goes to show the influence we have as a country working together with others, that our voice and messages have weight.
The Biden administration is essentially committing to apply its convening power at the WTO to begin text-based negotiations to hammer out a compromise with countries that oppose the waiver, including the European Union, Japan, and the United Kingdom. Shyam Balganesh is an intellectual property professor at Columbia Law School.
Sending a message multilaterally that the United States is back and the United States cares, not just about its own domestic interests, but also internationally on the multilateral stage, and is ready to play a leadership role, that's a very important signal.
But what the U.S. is supporting is narrower than the original proposal, covering only patents, not other intellectual property protections, and only vaccines, not other COVID-19 related technologies, including diagnostics and therapeutics. It's the first step in a long process. The WTO is consensus-based, and all members must agree to move forward. Some waiver opponents, including the EU, have signaled they are open to negotiations to address the pandemic. Ursula von der Leyen, president of the EU Commission.
And that's why we are ready to discuss how the U.S. proposal for waiver on intellectual property protection for COVID vaccines could help achieve that objective.
Once WTO members agree on a text, a process that could take months, countries will implement laws to remove the legal risks of producing generic versions of the vaccines. The hope is that it will speed up global vaccinations and reduce inequity in distribution. While some countries like the U.S. have given most of their population at least one shot, some countries have not even delivered a single shot. But the pharmaceutical industry warns that waiving patents may backfire. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News.
The World Health Organization warns that African countries risk a new wave of coronavirus infections because of the slow rollout of life-saving vaccines and the circulation of new variants. Lisa Schwein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The WHO reports the epidemic curve in Africa has plateaued for 6 weeks, with the number of cases now standing at more than 4.5 million, including 123,000 deaths. The UN Health Agency, however, reports the relatively low number of cases is giving rise to complacency and non-compliance with preventive measures such as masking and social distancing. The WHO Regional Director for Africa, Machidiso Moeti, says the greatest threat to the spread of the infection and a resurgence of cases are due to delays and shortages of vaccine supplies.
African countries are slipping further behind the rest of the world in the COVID-19 vaccine rollout, now accounting for only 1% of the vaccines administered worldwide, down from 2% a few weeks ago. Only around half of the 37 million doses shipped to the continent have been administered so far.
Moeti says African countries need to step up and do their part to get the available shots into people's arms fast. So far, the COVAX vaccine sharing program has delivered some 80 million doses to Africa. COVAX officials say vaccine deliveries from the Serum Institute of India were halted in March because of the dramatic resurgence of COVID-19 in India. This, they note, has resulted in a shortfall of 140 million doses as India uses the vaccines to inoculate its population. South Africa and India are leading efforts at the World Trade Organization for a temporary waiver on intellectual property rights that are preventing the mass production of generic COVID-19 vaccines. Moeti says she welcomes the U.S. decision to shore up these efforts. The sooner the manufacture and rollout of safe and effective vaccines can take place. In the meantime, she says, one of the quickest and surest ways to save lives is for countries to share their surplus stock of vaccines with countries in need. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
As India struggles under a second wave of the novel coronavirus pandemic, auto rickshaws have become the latest symbols of hope in Delhi, doubling as an ambulance to help the collapsing healthcare system. Chris Dignam of Reuters reports.
Actual ambulances are hard to come by in India, which reported a record of more than 412,000 new cases and roughly 4,000 deaths on Thursday, dashing hopes that cases were peaking. With ambulance fleets unable to keep up with the surging cases, the Delhi government, with the help of a nonprofit organization, has mobilized more than a dozen auto rickshaws equipped with hand sanitizers and face masks, while oxygen cylinders are provided on an as-needed basis.
New Delhi is choking under COVID-19, and I am providing this auto rickshaw ambulance service to help the public.
Auto rickshaw driver Raj Kumar, who now dons a full PPE suit, has stepped up to ferry patients to and from Delhi's largest hospital, which is overflowing with COVID-19 patients.
Obviously, everyone is scared. But if everyone stays home because they are scared, then who's going to go out and help those in need? So all of us will have to come out of our homes and serve the common people by any means possible, be it with money or power. We must all help each other.
The auto rickshaw ambulance service, which comes free of cost to those who use it, said it has received requests from other parts of the country to start services there. The virus has spread from cities to villages even less equipped to cope. Limited public health care, including a lack of testing facilities, means the threat is grave in rural areas, home to nearly 70% of India's population of 1.3 billion. Data from India's health ministry showed that total infections have passed 21 million as of Thursday, and the overall death toll climbed above 230,000. A tally experts believe vastly underestimates the actual total.
That's Chris Dignam of Reuters. Two Americans were sentenced to life in prison by an Italian court on Wednesday after the 2019 murder of a policeman near their Rome hotel in a case that shook the nation. Imam McCarthy of Reuters reports.
Two American tourists were sentenced to life in prison by an Italian court on Wednesday for the 2019 murder of a policeman near their hotel in Rome in a case that shook the nation. Finnegan Lee Elder, who was 19 at the time, had admitted to stabbing Mario Cerchiello Rega in the early hours of July 26, 2019, while his friend Gabriel Christian Natale Yorth, then 18, was tussling with another police officer. However, the pair say they had acted in self-defence because they thought the two policemen, who were not in uniform at the time, were thugs out to get them after a botched attempt to buy drugs. Elder shook his head as the verdict was read out, while Cerchiello Rega's widow, Rosa Maria Acilio, wept. She spoke outside the court.
This verdict is the result of a long and painful process that will not bring Mario back to me. It will not bring him back to life, and it will not give us back our life together. Today is the first step towards a new justice. And Mario will be an example for those who need justice.
The court rejected the Californian's testimony and handed down the toughest punishment possible in Italy. The pair were also found guilty of attempted extortion, assault, resisting a public official, and carrying an attack-style knife without just cause. Under Italy's penal code, criminals serving life terms can be eligible for parole after 21 years if they have a good behaviour record. The defence lawyers immediately announced they would appeal.
That's Imam McCarthy of Reuters. This is the Voice of America. Police in Thailand say they have charged a U.S. citizen from the state of Colorado with murdering his pregnant Thai wife. Police in northern Thailand said 32-year-old Jason Matthew Balzer was arrested in northern city of Chiang Mai and confessed to killing his wife after an argument. Police have been alerted to a possible crime when his wife's mother, who was unable to reach her daughter, Pichapon Kichok, by phone, went to the couple's house and found bloodstains. European Union leaders are meeting for a summit in Portugal on Friday, sending a signal they see the threat from COVID-19 on their continent as waning amid a quickening vaccine rollout. Their talks hope to repair some of the damage the coronavirus has caused in the bloc in such areas as welfare and unemployment. They will also discuss the U.S. proposal to share the technology behind COVID-19 vaccines. You're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofo, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Ugandan victims of former Lord's Resistance Army Commander Dominic Ongwen are not happy about the 25-year prison sentence given to him by an international criminal court. One victim calls the sentence a joke. Halima Atumani reports from the Ugandan capital, Kampala.
In handing down the 25-year sentence Thursday, ICC judges said they had to take into consideration the fact that Ongwen was abducted and recruited into the Lord's Resistance Army rebel group at the age of 9. The judges noted that while the former LRA commander committed many crimes, Ongwen too lost family, had his education interrupted, and saw his hopes for a bright future come to a halt the day he was abducted. In February, Ongwen was found guilty of a total of 61 charges for attacking civilian populations and committing atrocities including murder, torture, enslavement, and gender-based crimes such as forced marriages, rape, forced pregnancies, and sexual slavery of young girls. The charges and sentencing Thursday were for his role in the attacks of four internally displaced people's camps in northern Uganda between July 2002 and December 2005. Victor Chen, founder of the African Youth Initiative Network, a non-government organization that brings together young victims of the LRA, spent 21 years in internally displaced camps in the Acholi region. He argues that the sentence is not sufficient punishment for the former LRA commander.
It is not justice, because justice would mean true restoration. But of course, it's a critical step towards accountability, which is an important pillar in pursuing justice. 25 years is enough to keep him away, so that by the time he comes, most of the direct victims would have died. So to me, I find it a bit problematic. It is simply a joke.
James Okello from Odek Village in Gulu District says he lost two relatives and property during the LRA war and believes Ongwen deserves life in prison.
This thing is not fair. If you kill one person from our in Uganda here, they can put you for 40 years. But Ongwen killed very many people. How can it be 25 years only?
Over 130,000 people are reported to have been killed during the LRA's decades-long war against the Ugandan government. Another 30,000 people are reported to still be missing and their whereabouts unknown. ICC judges indicated that during Ongwen's jail term, the court could again consider reducing the 25-year sentence. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala, Uganda.
Britain sent two warships to the English Channel Thursday amid a dispute with France about fishing rights. French fishermen say they have been illegally prevented from fishing the waters around the British island of Jersey. Harry Ridgewell reports from London.
About two dozen French trawlers sailed to Jersey to stage a protest Thursday. One vessel briefly entered the main harbour on the island. Among those taking part was Ludovic Lazaro. He said, "We come today because we have always fished in the waters there. We have always fished here, and then overnight they take away all our fishing rights." Britain dispatched two warships to Jersey to monitor the situation. The ships returned to port after the French protest finished late Thursday, and the British government said it remains on standby. France also deployed two maritime patrol vessels to the area. Talks between the fishermen and Jersey authorities failed to come up with a solution. Jersey is British, but lies just off the French mainland. Under Britain's exit deal from the European Union, special provisions were included for the island's fishing grounds, says James Kane, a fisheries expert at the UK's Institute for Government.
French boats that were catching fish in Jersey waters for at least 10 days a year between 2017 and 2020 have the right to continue doing so on into the future. What it seems has happened is that the Jersey authorities have taken a very restrictive approach to proving that you were fishing and how much you were fishing in the last 3 years.
France has threatened to cut off Jersey's electricity supply. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Sunday is Mother's Day in the United States, a day set aside for honoring mothers and celebrating all those qualities and actions that make mother, quote, mom, unquote. But animals and even plants have also evolved their own dizzyingly diverse maternal styles over the millennia, all of which serve to make sure the next generation thrives. VOA's Adam Phillips has more.
For many Americans, Mother's Day is a time to show our all-too-human mothers that we appreciate them. But for Columbia University ecologist Shahid Naeem, Mother's Day is a time to celebrate mothering in all species of life.
Because we recognize mothering and fathering as critical to the survival of our species, and how that is common not just among all of the different races of humanity, but every single species you see, even if it's just an insect on the ground, or plants, or mushrooms growing in the forest, it's a sign that life on Earth is working.
Like other primates, we human beings spend long periods of time gestating, then caring for our young, usually in groups. Columbia zoology professor Marina Cords, who has spent years observing groups of blue monkeys in the forests of Kenya, is often reminded of them when she sees groups of human mothers and their infants in New York City's Central Park.
Because the non-human primates, you often find that the mothers and infants hang around together. When I see that in the park, it's exactly what I think of. Oh, there's one of those gaggles of mothers and kids sharing the job of watching the kids. Many pairs of eyes watching over those vulnerable youngsters at once might prevent them from being picked on by a predator or harassed by somebody in the group who's a little bit malevolent.
Unlike primate mothers, many other animal mothers do not stay around to raise their young. Shahid Naeem says frogs offer one example.
Frogs lay their eggs and they go away. But in the case of the gastric brooding frog, the tadpoles actually grow up in the stomach of the mother and then eventually emerge as little frogs outside of the mouth of the mother. They've seen pictures of this. It's very strange. And there are some tree frogs as well, in which the tadpoles stay very close to the mother and will derive both protection and nutrition from the mother. So even among what we think of as primitive vertebrates, you'll still see some range of parental care.
Most animal mothers protect their young in some way.
We've all admired cats picking up their offspring one by one and moving them from a place where they thought is no longer safe. Birds will wander around and pretend like they have a broken wing to try to distract the predator away from the eggs. We all know if you encounter a goose that's raising goslings, it's going to be very aggressive to you when it's trying to scare you away from its offspring.
Human mothers teach their young, often by joining them in observing and interacting with the external world, then discussing it with them. Other animals learn on their own, mostly by observation and mimicry. But Professor Marina Cord says there are other clever ways that mammalian young manage to learn from their mothers. And that's all the more reason we should take the time out to contemplate and celebrate motherhood all year long. I'm Adam Phillips reporting from New York.
A bloody hours-long battle in Rio de Janeiro slum is echoing into a new day, with authorities saying the police mission successfully eliminated 24 criminals, while residents and activists claim human rights abuses. Dozens of officers from Rio State Civil Police stormed a working-class favela just after dawn Thursday, targeting drug traffickers from one of Brazil's most notorious criminal organizations. When the fighting stopped, there were 25 dead, one police officer and 24 people described by police as, quote, criminals, unquote. That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great weekend.